So what we found just generally is that about 1 in 3 women had experienced some form of violence online. Mm-hmm. We found some troubling statistics that showed that when women experienced violence, something like 20 to 25% would delete their profiles or stop using a public service. So somewhere between 1/4 to 1/3 would remove themselves from online spaces because of.
Do you aspire for a booming middle-class economy? Listen along to understand what turns the wheels of Uganda's economy with our lineup of credible influencers in their fields.
I'm so thrilled to be bringing you Nima Aya. She was appointed by Facebook, guys, to, well, newly launched Global Women's Safety Advisory Board. So she's going to tell us more about that. So today's report is going to be studying alternate realities, alternate internets with Nima Ayer, Bonita Nyamwire, and Sandra Nalubega. And this was published in August 2020. So today we only have Nima, who is the founder of the policy here in Uganda, and will be telling us everything about what she does. I'm your host, Aggie Patricia Chiromwe, a communication strategist with 8020 Marketing. Nima, welcome to the podcast. We've been waiting to have you on here for so long. When did you book this call? Like 3 months ago.
It's finally happened.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yay. Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Okay. That's so why don't you give us a general overview of your report findings? Why did you even try to seek out knowledge about your topic? Alternate realities, alternate internets, what does this even mean?
Yeah, so I started thinking about this idea back in 2018. And basically what I was seeing was that a lot of people were starting to talk about online violence. So for me, I've had a very long relationship with the internet. I think I first got on the internet when I was maybe 7 or 8, and this was in the early 90s. And I knew from that moment on that it would, like, you know, very much change my life and very much change the world. And so I had a very different experience on the internet than I think most people would have, because back then it was so different. It was so simple. And then kind of seeing the evolution of the internet, we went from like Orkut to High Five to MySpace to Facebook to Twitter to Instagram to TikTok, and just really seeing that evolution. And around the time, there was also a lot of talk about online violence and what that means for women and what that means for women's experiences online. And what I was seeing, especially in the African context, was that there was just not enough data to really speak about what was happening. So it was like, okay, yes, people are experiencing this. We have qualitative information that this is happening. Wow. And we especially have information that this is happening to politicians, to journalists, to media personalities. But what is really happening to the everyday user? That was kind of the question we really wanted to get at. What is it like to be an African woman on the internet? What is the experience like on this, you know, digital world that was not really built with an African woman in mind? So a lot of these platforms are built, Silicon Valley, Europe, and they have a very different universal user in mind, right? So oftentimes when you talk to someone on the internet, for example, if you go on Reddit, the assumption is that you are a white male and you are middle class or wealthy. That is always the assumption. It is never that you are an African woman in Kampala, right? That's never the first thing anyone thinks. So we really wanted to find out, what is it like for women online? How do technology companies react to their needs? What are the laws protecting women online? So we just wanted the whole, like, holistic view of that experience. So we spoke to over 3,000 women in 5 countries. We did this research in Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, South Africa, and Senegal. Mm-hmm. And we spoke to women on the streets, mostly in capital cities, because once you leave the capital city, finding women who use the internet actually really, really plummets. Like, yeah, it's not even very possible. So they were only done in capital cities, and the findings were very, very interesting. And I think till today, it's one of the, maybe the largest scale study of this kind that was done in Africa. And what we found just generally is that about 1 in 3 women had experienced some form of violence online. Mm-hmm. We found some troubling statistics that showed that when women experienced violence, something like 20 to 25% would delete their profiles or stop using a public service. So somewhere between 1/4 to 1/3 would remove themselves from online spaces because of their experiences. So, I mean, for the whole time, we've had this rhetoric of, you know, that internet penetration is skyrocketing, but then we talk about the digital gender gap. And now for me, like, to see this in the data that people would remove themselves from digital spaces because of these experiences, it's very disappointing to see. It becomes another barrier to digital inclusion that is not really being addressed. Other things that we found that I think are worth mentioning is that, for example, in Uganda, 90% of the women we spoke to did not know of any laws that existed to protect them online. Mm. They didn't know of any laws that would support them if they were victims of violence, or, you know, to get any kind of justice around that. So oftentimes people will say, oh, you know, the laws exist, but if people don't fundamentally know how it works, what it is, how to use it, then not particularly useful, right? And then we also found that there were very low rates of response from the tech companies to the reports people made, or actually people didn't even know very much how to report online violence they'd experienced to the platforms. Mm-hmm. That was another thing. And then I think the last thing that I'd want to touch upon is that many of the women we spoke to did not know where to go to learn more about digital safety. So, mm-hmm. for example, some of the answers we got were like the police. But can you imagine in any situation like in Kampala where somebody would walk into a police station to say, I need digital safety support? Like, just no, it wouldn't happen. So most people didn't know. And that is actually also very...
like the spoiled child or spoiled brat. What are you doing here?
What would they know? They're not even trained on it. So that's like one of our recommendations is like, training people to have a gender sensitive lens about digital safety. Mm-hmm. Because, like, for example, some of the interviewees said that, you know, if you go to the police to say you're being harassed online or stalked or hacked, the police, you know, would just laugh at you and say, come back, you know, when you have bruises, or come back when you have real blood to show. Like, this is
going
to
take you more seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. So, the method was you going out and getting interviews to women within the cities, or did you?
So it was a mixed method study. So we had quantitative interviews that we did. So we had in each city, we had enumerators. So we trained 10 to 15 enumerators. For example, in Senegal, we had to do it in French. All the other countries, in Ethiopia, we did it in Amharic. So we had to train the enumerators on the topic itself, because even for them, they might not be well-versed on online violence, doxing, you know, all these different concepts. And we also did qualitative interviews. So we spoke to 5 to 10 people in each country to also get their views on online violence. And we also did focus group discussions. So we did small focus group discussions where we asked women about their experiences. And I think all of these three together really enriched the data and made for a very rich report.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you bring out this information right now, because we recently did an episode on social media usage in Uganda. So this is going to be very relevant for the listeners. So if you're listening in and you're enjoying the conversation, guys, you need to go check out the show link or show notes below. So you mentioned already about the approach. Once your report was released, who did you distribute it to?
The first thing we did is that we had a pretty big media campaign on it. So we worked with a media house in Uganda. In retrospect, I think one of the things I would do differently is to have engaged media houses in each of the countries. But just because we're headquartered in Uganda and that's what we know best, we went just with Uganda. So we had pretty significant coverage in Uganda, but we also worked with some international media. And we got like tons of publication and blogs printed out on it. And I think that that was really helpful in raising awareness about the issue. I think people talk a lot more about it now, but I think back in like 2020, it was still kind of an emerging issue. And sort of, as you said, Facebook definitely did take up this data. They, of course, invited me to join their Women's Safety Advisory Board. And I think for me, it's also really nice to see our data cited in many reports that are coming out across the continent talking about online violence. I think, as I said, we are still one of the few reports from many of these countries that is quantitative in nature. So it's nice to see us getting cited. And yeah, we haven't published it academically because I have personal gripes with academic publishing, just because it's not very open. I mean, there are open journals. But then again, what difference does it make if you take it from our website or if you take it from an open journal? In the end, our aim is that knowledge should be shared. Yeah. So we also tried to make the information very accessible. So there's two other things we did. So if you go to our website, you'll see that you interact with a bot. Mm-hmm. So you can read the report or you can read it in a conversational bot format, because the report itself is over 10,000 words and it's like 60 pages. And completely keeping in mind that a lot of people don't have the patience to read that much.
Yeah.
So we created this bot where through maybe 3 to 4 minutes, you get the whole gist of the report. We used GIFs. We used, you know, different methods to keep it light and conversational. And then we also created tons of infographics, and we had a pretty big social media campaign where we really distilled the findings to be very simple infographics so that people could share it. And actually, till today, I think just this week, somebody shared one of our infographics, and it's been over a year, which I think is really good testament to the power of visuals, right? Yeah. So yeah, I think we did a pretty good job in just the publication of it. As I said, I think we could have done better, especially in countries where we don't have a big footprint like South Africa and Senegal. I do wish that we had done a better job of engaging with partners and with organizations there. But overall, yeah, I was quite happy with the response we got to the research.
Yeah. So just before I forget, this segment was really also started because there's just amazing information like this one, hidden in reports. And I just figured people don't like to read as much. And yeah, there's an adage about hiding information in writing, right? So I thought this would be a good way to bring interesting information like your stats and data for people to listen to them from their authors, right? So it must be really interesting also to be an advisor at Facebook. What's your function as an advisor?
Yeah, so how many advisors are we? I don't even know the number, to be honest. I think it's 12, and we're from different countries. Currently, I'm the only one representing all of Africa, which is a little bit of a shame because Africa is 1.5 billion people. And I don't think any one person can speak to all of Africa, but you know, Africa is a country. We sort of get to see what new features Facebook is planning to roll out, and we get to give our feedback on it, basically. So we meet maybe every quarter. We get to see some of the advanced features that are coming out. It's been very interesting because I do think social media companies get a bad rap. Mm-hmm. But when you see the work that has to be done, it is very daunting. And yes, okay, they do have resources. They do have money. But I think they're trying to solve some of society's big problems. And I had a meeting recently where someone said, you know, I think you need to separate it into a couple of things. So what are the problems that social media can solve? What are the problems that they cannot solve? And what are the problems that they have caused? Like, I think if you look at those three separately, like fundamentally, like human beings can be very vile creatures. That's just human nature, right? Mm-hmm. Can Facebook solve such a thing? Like yes, you can moderate content, but can you change humanity itself? And that's like, no, it's too big of an ask. But of course, we're trying ways to do like content moderation and improving AI systems and all that stuff. But it is a very daunting task, I have to say. And it's been very exciting being on this board because I get to see some of that decision-making that goes into it and hopefully give perspectives from the African continent. But yeah, a lot of work to be done. And also just really giving me the view that we have a lot more research and thinking and planning to do as Africans, because otherwise people are just going to make decisions for us. And that's what I always say. And I'll be a broken record about it, but it's very true. And if we're not doing our own research and, you know, deciding what we want and don't want and planning our futures, then other people will do it for us, whatever the sector. And I work in the digital sector, so speaking particularly for that sector.
Yeah, it must be really interesting. The fact that you're an advisor that was chosen from Uganda, where not a year ago, Facebook was cut off from users. Yeah. It must be interesting for you to advise from that perspective, but Facebook being cut off would be one of the reasons or one of the challenges you would be having, you as an advisor in and also in your position. So what would you tell us about the laws that sort of impede the space, right? laws that suffocate the space, laws that help the space thrive?
Yeah, I think a lot of African countries tend to copy paste laws and from one another or other contexts. And a lot of them can be quite regressive in nature. So, of course, you know, I think Uganda is the poster child of regressive laws. So we had the social media tax. We got rid of that for another regressive law, the digital services tax. We had internet shutdowns. I think maybe we were one of the first to pioneer it. And then we have it every election. This year's was particularly bad. It was very long. And then it seemingly felt that once they turned it on, like things were never quite right again. I think we suffered with poor internet for many, many months after, maybe even till now. As you just said, Facebook was shut down. There were some reports this week that maybe it's back, but then maybe not. So thinking about the fact that digital platforms can really catapult us to new heights, you know, just as you said earlier, before we got on the call, about how Zoom is really transforming our relationships. And for some people, it's really amplifying our work. It's making our work easier. You have to commute less. Like all these things really improve your standard of living. Mm-hmm. But many governments make laws that work against this kind of progress. And maybe they're coming from a place of fear. Maybe they're coming from a place of, maybe they're misguided, which is why I really feel that like the work that we do at Policy is very important, because we want to work with governments to talk about how tech can work for us. So, you know, to like develop our economies, to develop, you know, to develop entrepreneurship. What does that look like? What are the kinds of progressive laws that governments can pass to help these things happen? And I would really love to have these discussions from a place of openness. Like just now, before I got on this call, I was on another call where there were people from governments from many different countries talking about algorithmic bias. And I was just thinking, like, how amazing would it be to have like African technocrats on such a call? But there was none. It was a global event, there was none. But just that openness, you know, where you come to a place to learn, to exchange, to come in and be open-minded. Like, I think that that is so important. And it's so important to have these conversations about how can we have a more progressive tech ecosystem? Like at every corner, like even if you're a tech entrepreneur, like there's so many hurdles to cross to start a startup, to have good internet, to have good electricity, to have taxes that work in your favor. Like all of that works against young Africans who want to do something in the tech sector. And you're even seeing it now. Like, I think if you look at the number of tech startups in Uganda between 2005 and now, I think we have very little to show, like in 2021 and 2020, because first of all, you can't compete with some of these big companies, but it also feels like a lot of the fizz has gone, right? And people are just not as excited about startups. I think it's still bubbling up in Nigeria and you're seeing lots of companies getting funding, but it just seems like the shine is a little bit gone in Uganda. And I wish that that could come back. And I wish that there was a general environment that was supporting it.
Yeah. And I really like how you say that we should really find how tech can work for us, because I'm working with a few government agencies to transition into like the e-governance. A few things here and there that really slow down the process, and the irony, you know, of it should be quick and fast and very efficient. But I'm looking forward to a few laws that can help us work better, or a few laws that can make all these processes much quicker. I don't know if you've tried using like the visas or the few.
That's actually a really good system. Like the Ugandan immigration platform, it's actually really, really amazing.
Yeah, immigration, the licensing, everyone is trying to go into e-governance, but there are few that are still very like conservative and not wanting to change. But they're bound to change. So I'm curious, what has been the impact of this report since August 2020?
So I think that's a really good question about what is the impact of our report. I do believe that social media companies have taken this report and this data into account. I can't really say how they've used it, but I do know that they have it and they do refer to it sometimes. And I do also believe that many of our partners working in this space have used this data. Also, in terms of the methodology, that's a place where it's also been really exciting because different researchers have reached out to us to reuse our methodology, to reuse our survey tools. So we actually developed a new survey tool. We kind of improved it based on the knowledge we had, and we tested it out in Cameroon to see how it works. So we know that other people have requested for they've either asked us for the data. So the data is open. You can get it. You just have to email us, tell us what you're using it for, and then we give you the whole data set. So people have requested us for the data. They've requested us for the survey tools, and they've also requested us for the methodology itself, which we're, of course, happy to share with everyone because we would love for more countries to do similar research and also for us to be able to do this research periodically. So as you know, things change so quickly, new people come online. I think it's important for us to continue to get more data and to keep updating our knowledge about what, as African women, what we need from the internet and what we want that internet to do for us.
Yeah. So as an African woman listening or tuning in right now in the spaces, what change would you like to invoke? So yes, you had findings, which you mentioned at the start of this conversation, but what change would you like to see from this report?
Yeah, I would love to see online spaces that are more built around the needs of African women. So, for example, there's a research study by Amnesty International called Toxic Twitter that showed that women of color are, I think, something like 80% more likely to be targeted by hate speech online. So I would really like there to be a safe space for women to just thrive and to just be their best selves and to also develop platforms that really meet their needs, whatever they are. I don't really know what it could look like, but I would love for us to just have that space to imagine, to create, to think, to dream, to imagine. Like, it just feels like we don't think as critically as we should about, you know, for example, sci-fi or like just thinking about African futurism. And I think it's definitely a growing field, and it's very exciting to see more content coming out on this topic. It's growing year by year. So just like different imaginings, because it always feels like we live in somebody else's knowledge system.
Yeah.
And we're forced to fit into this system. So if we were to develop our own knowledge systems, which of course we did and we had, but I'd say colonialism took that very much away from us. Mm. And it's not worthwhile to say like we should go back to that. I also think that that's not the solution. But a better solution could be, what are the avenues where we can get together and co-create something different that is ours and that we have made and that just works best for us and gives us a future that's maybe, I think I like to dream a little bit, but that's like not so patriarchal, not so capitalist, not so exploitative, because that sort of feels like the direction that we're going in often. Like a lot of things are just masked under exploitative capitalism, you know, like whatever, girl boss or whatever. But just how do we use data research to have different imaginings of our future?
I love it. So you mentioned something about wanting to see other platforms in your response to the Facebook part, that you want to see more openness or transparency. Would you elaborate more on that? Or how would you want other people to communicate, for example, the professionals, to communicate and spread the word within the results of this report?
Oh, I think that's a good question. Mm. And I say this because I also worry about the recommendations that are communicated from this research. So I'll explain it so that it makes sense. So one thing that I very much worry about is overregulation.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't ever want people to take these results and say, you know, 1 in 3 African women has experienced online violence, so we have to stop using these platforms. Like if something like that happened, that would be my absolute nightmare. Absolute nightmare. And you know that people can take any narrative and turn it to their benefits, right? It very much works. If you were looking at patriarchy, it would very much work to the benefit to say, you know, the internet is unsafe, so I won't allow my wife to use the internet. You can spend data in any way you want. And that is something that I really worry about. So this is the opposite to your question. I'm answering what I would not want to happen. Yeah. But what I would want to happen is I would love for, I think it has been important to highlight the needs of African women, because if we do not highlight it, then nobody takes it into account. Like, I'll give you an example in that we have another project with Facebook where we're working on inclusive tech policy, for example. And we were doing a workshop with some other people, and we gave a scenario where, you know, a typical African woman, you know, she has issues with electricity, she has issues with internet connectivity, she has issues with finances. And for us, this is a very average person, right? This is just everyday life. But when we explained the scenario, we kept hearing that, oh, that's an extreme case. That's, you know, that's, we would never build anything for that person because it's so extreme. It's not the norm. And yet it's very average. You would find anyone who has those issues. Because we have done studies where we went to Jinja and we went just to the outskirts of Jinja, and we struggled to find women with smartphones, because the question we were trying to find out is women using the internet. So we used ownership of a smartphone as a proxy. And this was before this study. This was a previous study. We used ownership of smartphone as a proxy, and we struggled. We really struggled to find women outside of Jinja, just in the surroundings, who use the internet. So, but when you explain this to people who don't know this context, who have never been to Uganda, who maybe have never set foot in Africa, it just doesn't sound very believable. It doesn't sound like you could make something for that kind of user. So, I think for me, this research was important because it identifies, or it shows, you know, like, these are the different types of women who use the internet. So how do we make platforms that cater to their needs? So, for example, how do you create platforms that take low bandwidth? So they take less data, less energy. They're in local languages. They are very visual, or they're very audio focused. They're basically meant for different users. Like, for example, some of us come from cultures that are very oral in nature. Like, we prefer storytelling, and, you know, we don't have a very rich written culture. Versus the internet is all written. It's all text. A lot of people will not identify with that, for example. Faces, it's like, sometimes you get on there and there's like over 1,000 people, like, just chit-chatting, and it's amazing. And it really works because it's not text heavy. It's a very simple platform for communicating. So I think just if communication professionals could dream a bit bigger, could talk more about progressive tech, could talk about how we could design platforms that are safer. For example, now children are online because of online education. What are their needs? So coming in from the lens of thinking about care and safety and better design, rather than coming from the angle of like, oh, be afraid, it's very dangerous, it's unsafe. Like, so I think that would be my preference, was we came in looking for solutions rather than pointing out the problems.
Yeah. Well, this is very interesting. Guys, go check out the link in the show notes for this report. Nima just seemed to summarize the report for us. So if you want to dive deep, you can go read it. We have one last question, which we normally love to ask our guests, Nima, on the podcast, because our podcast is about helping us realize our middle-class economy. And from you in the digital space, what do you think it's going to take Uganda to achieve a middle-class status in 2040?
Good question. I think it comes down to improving our internet access, because now schools have been closed for almost 2 years. And I think it's going to be very, 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 very evident which children thrived and didn't during this time, who had access to the internet and online learning and who didn't. And it also just comes down to the fact that the internet in Uganda is so expensive. It's the most expensive in East Africa. It's unreliable, and it's Yeah, it's expensive and unreliable, like two terrible things. And so much of okay, like to be honest, I think so much of what I know and have learned, I have learned online. And I continue to learn every day. Every day for me is about learning. And I can do that because I have the internet. And just to think that so many people are denied this privilege, this joy of learning, of growing, of seeking different careers because they don't have fundamental access to something that is very quickly becoming a human right in some countries. Like everyone should have access to this kind of free-flowing information. And that is stifled in different ways, either by, you know, taxes, by internet shutdowns, by poor quality of services. And I think that that investment by the government will go a very long way, because if you think about it from the terms of education, from the from terms of like information, like health information, employment, nowadays, I try to say this to people, you're not just competing against 45 million Ugandans, you're competing against the world.
Wow.
Jobs have gone remote. Like someone, you know, from somewhere else is going to come and take this position because people have now opened their minds up to this. So you really need to be competitive and you need to grow as a person. So I think there's many things that have to be done, right? You have to overhaul the education system and improve the roads and all those things. But for me, I feel that the internet is somehow of a smaller investment in terms of the money, but I think that will have very, very, very large impact.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned this. Our audience is predominantly 28 to 34. So we have a lot of young people that come into organizations and they need training or call it internship, but you find them like Facebooking their way out, WhatsApp in their way out, yet they have free internet they can use to skill themselves, learn something new every single day, opposed to just waiting for someone to give them some work to do. Yeah. So I think you mentioned very valid points. We can do so much with the internet. We can learn so much. And yeah, then at the end of the day, I think for us, it will be very important to then achieve that middle-class economy with very land very vibrant citizenry. So yes, thank you so much, Nima. I am very interested to know what you're working on next. Is there something you're working on that's very exciting for us to know?
So many things. So many things. But the next one we're doing is we're doing some online gender-based violence research in Francophone countries. So we're doing it in DRC, Cameroon, and Senegal. So that is one of many, 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 many things coming up next year. And we're like, yeah, we're super excited about the next year. I think it's going to be really, really awesome.
Yeah. Okay. And the final one, do you have any acknowledgements for this report?
Yeah, I had tons. So, of course, as you said earlier, the report was done by myself, my colleagues, Bonita and Sandra. We also, there is a last acknowledgement page, but we had a ton of enumerators who helped us out. We had a ton of research partners, all the women who gave us their time, who spoke to us. Also, it was funded by the Association for Progressive Communication, who was in turn funded by RDRC of Canada. So also big thanks to them for helping us make it happen.
Give us your feedback. We're on Facebook, On Uganda Podcast, and Instagram. If you're looking for any other communication solutions or you'd like to be hosted on this platform, reach out to me on LinkedIn, Aggie Patricia Turomwe, and Aggie Patricia on Twitter.